This afternoon, we have Dr. Max Struel from Sweden. He will present maintaining environmental integrity through responsible aquaculture, constraint, opportunities, and challenges. Dr. Max Struel is associate professor at the Beijer Institute, Royal Swedish Academy of Science, and the Stockholm Resilience Center, Stockholm University. His research focuses on sustainable aquaculture development with special emphasis on resource management and environmental impact assessment. His research on aquaculture involves analyzing and developing farming techniques building on ecological engineering. His research portfolio also comprises biodiversity and resilience studies in temperate coastal habitats, as well as identification and valuation of ecosystem goods and services. So welcome, Dr. Struel. Max Struel.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm really honored to have been invited to this very important meeting, and I would like to thank the organizing committee for inviting me. I will be the second Swede talking here today, and I don't think there will be any more Swedes. I think we are two at this meeting. Many of the presentations today and yesterday have emphasized the need for sustainable utilization of resources and improved development of culture systems and management. And this session on aquaculture and the environment continues to have this focus and explores further the challenges for how aquaculture can develop within environmental borders. There will be some overlap with previous presentations, but that probably only emphasizes that the issues that's being addressed are very important. And in tomorrow's expert panel discussion, John Benson will explore how aquaculture interferes with aquatic biodiversity, and Doris Soto will explain about the newly developed ecosystem approach to aquaculture. And finally, Mike Hine will cover aspects of biosecurity issues in aquaculture. And I'm sure that these presentations will stimulate an interesting discussion. So, the title I was given for this introductory lecture is Maintaining Environmental Integrity Through Responsible Aquaculture, Constraints, Opportunities, and Challenges. This is, of course, a very broad subject. And for this presentation, I decided to focus on a somewhat larger perspective. So I will start talking about what's really at stake here, and then give examples of ongoing processes that have identified environmental integrity issues and developed criteria for responsible aquaculture. I will also touch upon available tools, framework that can now be used to guide development. And I will end with a short discussion about possible generic traits that responsible aquaculture can have and list a few challenges and prospects for the future. So the key word in this title I was given is environmental integrity. And this is indeed a very challenging concept, both in general and particularly in connection to aquaculture. And to be able to discuss about responsible aquaculture out from an environmental perspective, we need to know how and what we mean when we use the concept environmental integrity. And this is very important because it will play a role when developing standards and principles of aquaculture. This life-supporting system, this is part of the very broad definition of environmental integrity. It means health of essential life-support systems of nature. So it's very broad. And our global life support system consists of all the different ecosystems that, and all the different services that they provide, something that is underpinning human health and well-being. And this is the large perspective I think that we should also embrace when discussing the future of aquaculture. So it has to do with ecosystem services, the services that are being generated by nature. How aquaculture impacts on these, and also how we depend on these services for the provisioning services that aquaculture provide us with. Ecosystem services has been very well defined and elaborated on in the Millennium Ecosystem Assessment that was carried out. And here they defined or identified four different main service groups: the provisioning services, the provisioning for food, fibers, freshwater; regulating services, climate regulation, water regulation, and nutrient cycling; cultural services with recreation and aesthetic experience and inspiration; support services that are necessary for all the products of all the other ecosystem services. I will not go into detail on these, but what we can say is that biodiversity is crucial for many of these functions and structures that support ecosystem services. So the main challenge for future aquaculture is not to develop in a way that degrade, but instead improve our life support system. This is, of course, also the aim for our other food production systems and also for human activities in general. So let's have a look at the big picture. We live on a human-dominated planet. The fact is that Earth life support systems and society have entered a new era of enormous change. In the last 50 years, ecosystems and their services has changed more than any previous period in human history, and further huge changes will take place as human population increase 2 to 5 more billions by mid-century. This means that human per capita consumption continues to expand and drivers of ecosystem change will intensify. So the life support system is under threat from climate change, overexploitation of resources, change of nutrient cycles, intense land use change, pollution, intensive alien species, biodiversity loss, etc. And there now seems to be enough evidence indicating that we have reached certain limits. And this notion of limits or thresholds is an important concept when discussing sustainability. Environmental pressures must be maintained within the limits to avoid sudden ecological change that can drastically reduce the flow of ecosystem services and thereby increase pressure on the social and economic systems. A recent study identified key biophysical planetary processes and boundaries that humans need to keep below to avoid catastrophic shifts with severe implications for human well-being. These includes freshwater use, land use change, biodiversity loss, nitrogen cycle, etc., etc. Even if these identified boundaries in this study can be discussed, it clearly illustrated our growing footprint on the planet and that we risk disrupting our life support system if not keeping at the various pressure within the boundaries. So, are there any global boundaries that we reach for aquaculture production? Despite aquaculture's rapid development, I will not show any graph of how development has taken place, because we've seen 7 or 8 already. But it's rapidly growing and at a significant scale, and aquaculture can probably not be identified as a major driver towards planetary limits. This compared to agriculture that caused large-scale land transformations, global impacts on nitrogen and phosphorus cycles, caused significant biodiversity loss and freshwater decline. So there's a huge difference between these two primary sectors. However, on both global, regional, and local scales, aquaculture affects and interacts with a biophysical environment, which had resulted in that local and regional thresholds being exceeded. Even if aquaculture development itself does not constitute the major driver towards emerging global boundaries, its contribution can even so be significant. Also of importance is that aquaculture will be affected when some of the planetary boundaries are being exceeded. For example, from degrading water quality, possible sea acidification, freshwater shortage, etc., etc. So, the message from this picture we've seen before at this symposium that we are not able to increase fish production from capture fishery anymore, and many large fish species around the world are in decline. It is mainly our ability to fish effectively and the lack of efficient governance structure that has put us in this situation. The increased demand for seafood also puts further pressure on aquaculture to fill the gap. One interesting question here is what the demand consists of. What products are increasingly being wanted and by whom? And if it's responsible, thinking of environmental and social concern, and is it just forming the production side to best meet this demand? Is that responsible? Without questioning fundamental sustainability issues that may be associated with some products. So, Barry, I show this for you. You like these circles? This moves the discussion into social and ecological domain, and we should try and stick within the environmental domain for this discussion. But it's, however, not so easy to do because they float into each other and are heavily interconnected. Addressing only one or two will not be enough for embracing sustainability. So, focusing on environmental integrity, some key environmental issues in aquaculture, farm design, space allocation, where do we put our farm, what's been there before, what, how is the land use looks like, water use, pollution, feed management, that we covered substantially today, broodstock and seed management, pathogens and chemicals, and I also put socioeconomic issues here because all the others will drive socioeconomic responses and behavior that will feed back on the environment, especially if people are poor and becoming more marginalized. Aquaculture gives rise to both multiple scale as well as cross-scale effects, from the local farm level to global pattern of resource extraction. Disease outbreaks in Asia, shrimp farming and salmon farming in Chile are a good example of cross-scale dynamics. Another is the mangrove destruction with linkages to regional fisheries. All these scales need to be considered. The aquaculture dialogue is a recent initiative that aims at developing standards for responsible aquaculture. These standards aim at minimizing key environmental and social impacts associated with aquaculture. 12 species groups being selected, and these were chosen because of their present or prospected future importance and their real or potential environmental and social implications. The species groups are shrimp, salmon, abalone, clams, mussels, scallops, oyster, pangasius, tilapia, trout, seriola, and cobia. I can also add to this that the initial selection of species groups for the dialogue does not mean that all other species or species groups are not of no concern with respect to being responsible. The list may be extended at a later stage, and in this first round, focus is on the most important species, and the standards being developed can probably function as archetypes that can be applied to other species or species group without too much change. So, these standards being developed in a way that ensure that all relevant stakeholders are involved in the processes and that appropriate scientific knowledge forms the basis for the discussion. A broad set of stakeholders based on consensus, a transparent process, external stakeholders also involved, measurable and performance-based, and science-based. So to date, we have 3 standards being completed out of 8, and other being under development. One is for tilapia, the other one is for pangasius, and one is for bivalves. If looking at the principles that's been designed, especially at those focusing on the environmental issues. The second principle has mainly a very local focus, aiming at conserving biodiversity and important natural habitats in the vicinity of the farm, dealing with land, water allocation, wastes, salinization, soil erosion, etc. But this principle is being guided by other international conventions, for example, the Convention of Biodiversity. Conserving biodiversity and ecosystem functions at all spatial scales. And this means that it has the ecosystem approach as a base. Principle number 5 deals with the shrimp health, focus on diseases, disease management, predator control, etc. Principle 6, management of broodstock selection, broodstock management, and also post-larvae. Principle 7 focuses on resource usage and includes terrestrial and aquatic resources, energy, genetic modified organisms, etc. So, the Aquaculture Stewardship Council will, after the standards being developed, be responsible for working with independent third-party entities to certify farms that are in compliance with the standards. There has been some concern about that the certification scheme may exclude small farmers and that this could lead to the loss of production systems that are important in agroecosystem settings by enhancing the resilience of these farmers. In connection to this critique, it had also stated that parts of the aquaculture dialogue focus too much on the technical and biophysical dimension, and that this at the expense of the social dimension. But even so, it put the finger on many relevant issues that concern the environment. Although the standards will be applicable at the farm level, they are intended to help to protect and maintain ecosystem function and ecosystem service at the larger scale. There is, however, some note that with the recognition that aquaculture operations are not solely responsible for total ecosystem health, and this is quite interesting because it clearly indicates the role of an ecosystem approach to the management. So, the ecosystem approach, the definition is that it's a strategy for the integration of the activity within the wider ecosystems such that it promotes sustainable development and resilience of interlinked social ecological systems. What does that mean? Well, I would just take a few examples of some principles. That aquaculture should improve human well-being and equity for all relevant stakeholders, and it should be developed in the context of other sectors, policies, and goals. We will hear more about this tomorrow. So there has also been a recent development of analytical tools, techniques for quantify and assess the biophysical performance in aquaculture. One is being that also been mentioned is the ecological footprint analysis. It was mentioned by Dr. Swaminathan, and he mentioned it in connection to global footprint of the population. But this has also been used as a visualizing tool for environmental support in aquaculture, expressing support as input or the support for output to assimilation of wastes. This is one example of a pond system depending on large areas for feed input and also depending on areas for assimilation. And the comparison is with a more semi-intensive system that has a natural production and can the processing of waste can be taken care of within the pond system and thereby a smaller footprint. But this is not a good tool for doing in-depth analysis, but it's a very good communicative tool. Everyone will grasp what you're trying to state. Here is the same. It's the footprint approach, but now being shown as a graph comparing different salmon cultures, looking at their terrestrial need through feed and also the marine ecosystem support also through feed. And we can see that they will vary. And this, of course, depends on how these systems are managed and the chosen species. Another recent tool is life cycle assessment. It's also been mentioned before. It's a tool that delineates and connect an economic system to environmental problems. And this tool is increasingly being used in aquaculture. So especially focusing on energy, there's been quite a few publications coming out with that focus. And it's an interesting tool because it really forces you to identify your system, what system you're dealing with. You can identify your production system and end that system border at the farm gate, or you can extend the borders and also include the the processing phase and the consumption phase. So for that, it's a very good tool. So, but it has been a focus on energy, and this is a table showing, comparing different products and showing how much energy that goes in per kilogram being produced. And we can see that the more extractive, extensive species like oysters, filter feeders, are very energy efficient, not so much energy needed to produce those. And then up the scale, we need to go up to terrestrial beef production, and we have examples also of farmed salmon. And you can extend this table as well, and now the number's been swapped around, so you find the most energy efficient has the highest number, and it's expressed as protein energy output per industrial energy input. And again, we see these extensive systems being very efficient, and at the lower scale, we have the intensive shrimp farming systems. But we also see that there are some systems like rainbow trout vary a lot depending on the methodology being used. So besides energy, also material consumption is estimated, and eutrophication potential and greenhouse gas emission. So these environmental impacts has a more global focus. And work is also ongoing to capture also invasive species and disease introduction. And it should be emphasized that this is a very good tool. It's developing, but it's not a tool that it's good for everything. Especially the social dimension will be difficult to capture with this tool, and there are better methods for doing that. So we should not try and squeeze in everything within this tool. There need to be a battery of different tools to analyze sustainability issues. So, aquaculture is a very diverse activity, and we learned that from all the different presentations from different countries, different regions. Different species, different trophic levels, extensive to intensive, small scale to large scale, simple to complex, family, industrial, low, high energy need, monoculture, polyculture, integrated multitrophic, local to international market, etc., etc. So it's very diverse activity. And systems also differ significantly with respect to what other resources than energy that are needed as inputs, as well as what wastes resulting from the production. Negative impacts from land or sea allocation from the farm itself will depend on both type of farm and the socioeconomic context, like displacing other users. Aquaculture also target different markets, ranging from local subsistence farming to the export market. With all this complexity in mind, we can ask ourselves, can we find a generic, general model of traits for responsible aquaculture? The many principles that address various sustainability aspects should help shaping the development if they are being applied, of course. These include code of conducts, best management practice, and lately also the standards produced within the aquaculture dialogue. Responsible aquaculture should sustain environmental integrity, something that will require both the ecological and technical knowledge, socioeconomic consideration and understanding, as well as institutional structures. So, in the literature, we can find that certain types of systems are being suggested or promoted as being more responsible compared to others, looking to their environmental implications. This is, of course, a simplification. But species low in the food chain are being brought up. Extensive and traditional forms of aquaculture, usually identified as having less environmental impacts compared to intensive systems. We heard a lot of integrated approaches being more sustainable than monocultures, or has the potential to be. And we also heard about moving farms offshore. That can be a responsible thing to do. So these systems have all different both positive and negative effects on the biophysical domain. Let's start with the species farmed low in the food chain. Many do agree that in principle, farming down the food web should be a responsible strategy for producing food from aquaculture. Such production would rely on less high-quality inputs, instead fertilizers, low-grade agriculture products, and low energy. And focus on species being herbivorous or omnivorous, like fish, carps, tilapia, or mollusks. But low-trophic level aquaculture species, like the carps, already dominate the global production. Increasing this production of low-trophic level fish will, however, increase the competition with humans for crops, and some already today start competing for fish meal and fish oil. We can try and optimize fertilization and use crop residues better, but in some situations we need to analyze why something like maize should be used as to feed fish when it could be used directly to feed humans. The health aspect would be an argument, but maybe not enough in all situations. On the positive side, these systems utilize natural or fertilized stimulated pond production or natural sea production, utilize low-grade agriculture products, and freshwater pond sediments can be used in combined agro-cultivation. And the downside is, of course, that they are less productive per area, and they compete with agriculture resources, and they also compete with space. As a special case, we have been discussing seaweed, and seaweed farming is very interesting. They are on the bottom of the marine food web and being identified as responsible product. This is, of course, true as such culture depend on only few resources and function as a net remover of nutrients. Again, seaweed already makes up a large portion of global aquaculture production. Massive cultivation of seaweed in the sea will probably not be the next frontier for food, however. There are limitations to what extent humans can digest and utilize carbohydrates and proteins in seaweeds. The role from an environmental perspective may be a different one than for direct consumption, because the positive side of these systems are the extraction of nutrients, both particles and dissolved, and it has also been mentioned their use to produce biofuels. But more research is needed on this. So the downside of seaweeds, because there actually is the need of space, and depending on where we put these cultivations, it can have a negative impact on the environment, especially if they're placed on other important habitats in the coastal zone, like seagrass beds. So what about extensive and traditional farming systems? They tend to use more land and water per unit biomass production compared to intensive systems, and this can have implications for biodiversity. Intensive farms consume more fossil fuel energy but has higher production per area. Pond may constitute an important source of metagenesis that contributes to global warming. These are all issues that need to be considered. For intensive system, we generally find that the biophysical impacts of aquaculture increase with intensity of the culture system. Energy, chemicals, high-grade feed components, etc. This may, however, not be true for all impacts, thinking of that less space may be needed for intensive production. This concentration may also result in that intensive farms better can treat their wastes and optimize feed management. Integrated mariculture has also been mentioned previously during today and also yesterday. And traditional farming systems involve different integrated techniques, including many different polyculture systems. Here an example of integration of rice and shrimps, and the many freshwater aqua systems that seems to come more in focus recently. What are the benefits and drawbacks from these, and what role will they play in future development of responsible aquaculture? Also, more modern aquaculture systems explore integrated techniques, and information about temperate and tropical mariculture system being summarized in the FAO publication that I showed. And this report also includes temperate and brackish water system, and also marine, and the Mediterranean Sea is treated as one special case. So this is one system that we have seen. It's an open system where we integrate fish with filter feeders and also with seaweeds, and the main aim is to extract wastes and of course to earn money from this system. And this we've seen, but I can confess I got this picture first from Terry, so it's mine. And we are talking about salmon, mussels and seaweeds being combined in an integrated mode. This is another model that can be suggested for an underwater integrated system, also focusing on the integration with seaweeds. This is another example from a land-based mollusk farming of abalone. It's being fed with seaweeds. It's a herbivore species. And here we integrate with the macroalgae cultivation that will be returned to the animal as feed. So there are many examples of integrated aquaculture, but let's go to the offshore systems. Some see farming of carnivorous marine fish species on alternative feeds as effective and responsible. These farms would probably be placed offshore and be based on the latest technology and maximizing feed management. However, the replacement of fish resources in feeds with alternatives from various sources may also be competing with humans for food if high-grade agriculture resources are being used. Other feeds are, however, ever being under development. But the positive side is that we move production from nearshore waters. The dilution of waste becomes a reality. Biodiversity conservation is a fact due to the moving out from the sensitive coastal areas. And we also apply efficient feed management. On the downside, these are quite energy consuming, but we really don't know how much yet. The competition with agriculture resources will also be a reality if finding alternative to fish meal. So, what are the challenges? One key challenge for responsible aquaculture development is to understand the complexity of aquaculture seascape landscape sufficiently enough to be able to identify multiple scale and cross-scale interactions. And another challenge is to get all on board with respect to labeling schemes, like small-scale farmers. It is not the incentives to restructure, if not the incentives to restructure, will be low. Example of strategy we heard, example from India, where small-scale farmers form these aqua clubs and actually can have a major impact on their sale and their environment. A general challenge will be to manage for multiple ecosystem services, and this will require substantial research, both ecological and economic, as well as policy analysis and public education, identifying the ecosystem services provided by seascape and landscape ecosystems, and to understand the ecological basis for these services well enough to also understand the trade-offs and synergies provided by different management scenarios, and to valuing or otherwise ranking these services so they can be prioritized and linked to both policy and market mechanisms. Let's see what constraints we have. For coastal farming, we see that the window is closing. Multiple demands on the environment increase the pressure on these systems, both in respect to space and quality of water for aquaculture. And this may constitute a challenge in the future for all type of aquaculture. And we see that the coastal urbanization is going to be sincere in the nearby future. So one constraint is the proposed next frontier may be the offshore environment, but still questions remain to be answered concerning environmental effects, resource use, and this will depend on what species that will be targeted and the energy dependencies. And we also have the large-scale driver, the climate change effects, and there are lots of uncertainties connected to this. So there are constraints, but we also find some opportunities. The aquaculture dialogue is an important step towards maintaining the function of our life support system, the ecosystems and their functions. The introduction of a more holistic approach through the ecosystem approach to aquaculture. technological development with respect to feeds, and also acknowledging the role for aquaculture for building resilience and providing different services. On land, freshwater aquaculture may increase the resilience in coupled agro-ecosystems by storing water. And the extractive function of nutrients of some species should also be acknowledged, and economic incentives should be put in place. Another opportunity is the development of the Intergovernmental Science Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services. This will bridge the knowledge between British scientific knowledge about degradation on the natural environment and government action required to reverse these damaging trends. And it will be a focus on science on biodiversity and ecosystem services that will be valuable when planning for aquaculture in different environments. Thank you.